Ja, danke dir für die Einführung und herzlich willkommen zu meinem Talk. Wie wir 100 Flipper-Automaten am Laufen halten.
Yeah, welcome to the English translation of how we keep 100 pinball machines alive by Alex Böttcher, live from C39C3. All talks on Congress are live translated between English and German and in one additional language. We appreciate your feedback. Please use the hashtag C3Lingo. Your translators for this talk are Snowborn and Nebelwirkung. My first question of this talk is, who of you has played pinball machine before? Okay, this is a lot. Who of you has one at home? Okay. Okay, good. Well, these are the machines we're talking about. And yeah, three teams we have to be clear about. And the life-saving measures. We have a collection of about 100 machines in our cellar hobby room. There are machines from at least 5 generations of tech, however you count that, and they are from 1957 upwards and 8 different manufacturers, if I counted correctly. And with us, friends and contacts can play. It's on a private basis, not public. And we, this is a team of 4 friends, 4 persons around Munich, where we have the room. And we enjoy repairing and play with pinball machines, sometimes also restoring when we have very broken machines. It's our hobby and our pastime. We meet weekly and work through a to-do list. And yeah, when we play and we notice something's broken, we write that down on a note and pin it to a wall with a magnet, and this is our to-do list. Coming to pinball machines, well, most of you know about that, but I'm starting with that. There's some basic principles that have since like 77 years not changed. And we have basically a wooden plate, and there are flippers who propel a ball along this playfield. The scheme looks somehow like this. In the middle, we have this wooden panel, a playfield, and on the downside, we have some electromechanical coil. And when there's current running through it, then it will draw this coil down, and it will move this flipper on the top side, and this is what is driving the ball around the playfield. Well, that's where we start. The first thing we need to keep alive, the 2 coils that are wrapped around over one another, and one of the coils is taking a lot of current, and that's a lot of current, and when it's on the edge, then there's a switch where we switch to the next coil, who's keeping the flipper on the top side, and yeah, that's the basic principles are the ball is rolling over the playfield and is triggering a contact. And there are a lot of gimmicks that are applied to the playfield, and most of these are switches, and the ball is running around the playfield and touching the switch, and therefore is triggering it. And the triggering is almost always resulting in the counting of some points, and when you play against each other or training, then it's always about the display of the points, of the score. What is usually happening, not always, but usually, is you change something, there is a reaction, and you like you play a multi-ball mode, or there are lamps that go light on and or light off, or some mechanical reaction, missions are starting, ending, and so on. And these basic principles are basically unchanged. A lot has changed over the last 60, 70 years. There have, of course, been several technical possibilities added because people have thought about new mechanisms. For example, there's the talk of switches. Switches as simple contacts are available for 70 years. Nowadays, we have new and more sophisticated micro-switches, light barriers, something like that. What has been changed? We can look for the generations I have listed for on this slide, five several generations of pinball machines. First of these were the electromagnetic machines, starting at about the mid-70s. For me, it's always linked to the end of the Apollo time, and that's where the electromechanical machines have been started. We know these from the old bars and pubs. You know these from a lot of movies where they're standing around with a back box at the end. There are so score wheels, which are having a count of 0 to 9, and they show you score. They're relatively easy game logic and relatively lot of sounds because a lot of electromechanic movement on this. The second generation are the early electronics, and they are very easily identifiable for the displays of the lights and the scores, and not so much has changed on this generation. When you look at this machine, they have been built that way, whatever I wrote, like in the 90s about. And there we have a gradient to matrix displays, well, displays that have, in a way, more sophisticated way of showing the score in the machine. And at the transition from the early electronics to this generation, we can see, we can let the ball run into the third dimension. We can see several layers of the play fields, and the ball can go on ramps, run underneath the play field, and reappear somewhere else. There are several mechanical gimmicks that have been added. And then we have a huge crisis with the pinball machine manufacturing. The 90s have been exchanged from micro game video games, and there has been a try to get a new generation of pinball machines on the market, Pinball 2000. The hugest feature was a monitor, a display that had been projected to the glass, and so it had to create a merge of a video game and a pinball machine. And for a long time, they have been pausing, and the development has been on hold. And for a few years, the production is growing again. And one of the most known of the companies that are manufacturing pinball machines is Stern in Chicago, and about 80% of the newly built pinball machines go to private collectors, and many people have some standing, and they're not so visible in the public anymore. And we have these generations of machines, and I wanted to talk about a bit about where is the problem and how do we keep these machines alive, and wanted to show you some highlights with what we're dealing with. First, where's the problem? We have mechanical stress. The flipper are accelerating the ball, and it's running around the play field. And the thing I found was 2.3 miles per hour. That's about 1 meter per second, 3.7 kilometers per hour. And this kind of matches my estimation. This means a lot of mechanical stress for the targets. And you have the targets standing around. You see pictures here on the downside. These are targets that have to be hit by the ball, and then you get some points. And when the ball is hitting them often enough, and then sometimes it's breaking, and you get vibrations and mechanical stress on the machine that can probably damage the machine. And on the right side, you can see the junkyard pinball machine that is supposed to symbolize the magnet of a junkyard, and you have to hit the targets, and it's swirling around and hitting the cars around. There are also switches inside, and there are huge speeds in this game, and very easily to mechanically break things. And also we have mechanical fatigue and aging, something like dirty and broken contact switches, deterioration. The micro switches inside bear through several mechanical cycles. There's also deterioration of metal and plastic, defective lamps. They ruptured rubber bands, also dirt. I have shown you some how it's looking in situ, how archaeologists would say. When you build this apart, you can see dirty flipper rubbers. You see dirt on the playfield. You can see this on the bumpers that you can see. I'm not going more into this, but the black things you can see on the part, this is abrasive from the ball running around it, and it's the more dirt there is, the worse the machine is running. Also ripped cables, blown fuses, sometimes with a reason, sometimes without, defective electronics, and also screws that can go loose. And the problem is that the smallest bugs, the smallest flaws can also be very annoying while playing. And that's when you play against each other, it's about who has the highest score, and when one of the switches is broken and you don't get the points, this is very annoying. And sometimes they're impeding the game process. You can't start the mode because the switch is broken. This can cost pounds and be a killer for a session. Defective lamps, there are also informations missing on the game score. It's not only for lighting the playfield. There are also an important display for several modes, or they probably don't say which missions you have already accomplished, and targets are missing, and you can still play, but there's still some feedback missing from the game, like what am I supposed to hit now? And some mistakes can result in a machine being unplayable. I'm showing here a situation where this is happening. It's like a stuck ball. Like in this picture, the ball is stuck and you can't play with it anymore, and you need some technician who can fix this, because otherwise it won't happen. Sometimes also the flippers are frozen and don't move anymore. Sometimes screws go loose and they lie around on the playfield. Well, there are a lot of mistakes, and they all make the game basically unplayable. Repairing is different in expenditure. I can show here our to-do list again. It's about 10% of the mistakes result in 90% of the repairing expenditure. Roundabout, it's an estimation. They make the expenditure. We need skills. So what can we do, or what should you be able to do when you can repair, so you can repair pinball machines, especially in these amounts? So you need mechanical skills. You need to be able to read blueprints, electrotechnic, electrical engineering, especially in the modern machines, soldering, analytical skills for troubleshooting, and also resilience. When something is not working, you need to sometimes just let it sit for a while. How do you let this run? Let's go into the skills. We start with the electromechanical machines. I have I'm showing here the basic plans. I don't know who of you knows about these. When you hear these at university while studying or something, you sometimes get the feeling that it's very boring. But they also happen. In electromechanical machines, they need that front to end. And when these are gates, well, here.
Was ist dann das?
What is this? These are sequences and repetitions, loops, you could say, by an engine. Like you hit a switch and you don't need one point but five, so you keep this engine running and it has a mechanism inside with a gear, and for five times it triggers a switch when it's one time around, and it looks very similar to early telecommunications technique. And so the ball is running, and this is the basic function scheme. The ball is running over the switch, and some mechanic for the score wheel has been triggered, and the wheel has to trigger, and the wheel has to run around, and the ball might be gone before the reaction is happening, so you need to add a relay. So you the ball is running over the switch. The switch is triggering the relay, and the this is called an in-hold circuit. So the impulse for the score wheel is long enough so it can trigger. So because otherwise it will take too long, and the magnet would be permanently attracted, and that would that is why we also add a switch that can trigger the final position, so the impulse will be exactly as long as it should be to trigger the mechanism. You can see here is a blueprint from back in the day. It has been painted, drawn similar to how they are being sketched today. The ones that are crossed are those that are usually closed, and we can see here an example. When I'm starting a game, like on this machine, I've shown this before, and I'm starting the game, I'm pressing the play button over there, and that's when the replay button is closing. And the first thing that we can notice here is 110 volt is on the front connected to this to store. And in the inside, there is a...
Okay, so if you have some kids at home, make sure that you take off the keys, because the child might get a little bit electrocuted. Back in the days, you also had some other switches. But even if there's a switch, you can still have tension here, so be aware. And there's a second switch, which is in position, so that make sure that there are still credits available, that you entered enough coins to be able to still play. And if you don't have enough coins left or enough credits, you cannot really start a game. And this switch, compared to the others, is at the very back of the box. So in the schema, they are very close next to each other, but inside the machine, they're actually on opposite ends of the device. That makes it a little bit more difficult in real life. And the mechanic looks like this. If you put in coins, one coil is being triggered and turns this wheel up. And if you start a game, it goes back.
Schließen diesen einen Schalter hier, der ist jetzt hier einfach kurz geschlossen.
And these two connections actually short fuse this switch, so it doesn't depend on you putting in coins. So what else can happen? Well, if you have a little motor, if it turned on forever and you have a look at it, maybe one of the screws are a little bit loose. And no, that was not the case. And this little piece, which is actually a gear switch, has had a lot of attrition, so it's become a little bit difficult because not a lot of replacement parts available, maybe still on eBay. But you have to make sure that the mechanic still works, so to the tenth of a millimeter it's still fitting, otherwise it doesn't run smoothly anymore. So this has been the X course into electronics engineering. So if we now go in the digital electronics of about the 1990s, I'm a little bit more comfortable in this area. This is what I grew up with. And if you have a little bit more discrete modules that are working in this. Yeah, and some easily usable 2 kilobytes and EEPROMs, you can still read them out easily. Yeah, with a nice frequency that you can have a look at with the OSC as well. And logic analyzer. What you often have to do is solder out some ICs and some sockets. And that is a daily business to exchange them. Fortunately, those cases are usually still available. And testing EEPROMs are there from some nice people who wrote them. But there are also certain problems. Let's have a look at one of these back boxes from this time, from about the middle of the 80s. There's been a socket connector, 2 platines, a CPU and a power platine, which is responsible for the power connection. And really, these 2 platines are connected together via this kind of connector. And if you plug this in and out 20 times, the connectors are usually spoiled or broken, so then you have to solder it again. So if you go one generation further with dot matrix displays from about 2000s, then you have a display with 128 times 32 pixels with gas, so still not any LEDs. You have complex electronics in these, so with a higher integration and more capabilities and big EEPROMs, but still EEPROMs. But there you're already at 27,008. And the diagnostic methods are more easy, and other features where you can have little games and gimmicks in there, such as this. So you can control the spit bowl with this and have to actually collect the spit from people. Such nice gimmicks are possible now. You get an extra pinball based on this. So let's have a look at the technology of these goodies. So if a lamp has burned out, this can be annoying. Now we have a game situation where 5 of these lamps, SHOOT, so the possibility to have a multi-ball, and if you have these multi-balls, you have to hit those 5 ramps. So if you didn't hit them yet, they're still blinking. Afterwards, they are permanently lit, and if one of these lights is burned out, where the yellow arrow is pointing to, you have uncertainty. Did you really hit it or not? So you just don't know. Maybe you remember it, but can be very annoying. But you can also shoot there, although you didn't really need to. And the question is, where does the arrow come from? If you have a look at the back of it, it might be the little lamp that has burned through. That might be the easy case. The socket can be broken through corrosion or some more mechanical faults. The diode can be broken, and there can be the cables leading away from this, so connectors or the plugs can be broken. The cable problem can also be in the electronic in the back box.
And this looks a lot more complicated than this one, and you can see still a lot of digital technology, but a bit more complicated. And I have said a bit about diodes before. Why are these in the game? Well, people got the idea. It's a typical engineer idea. You have 64 lamps and 64 switches organized in 8 columns to 8 rows, and they're organized in a matrix, and from this lamp matrix that we can see as an example here, there's always one column that has been activated, and all lamps on this row are under current, and they're all burning, also with these open collectors over here, and you get a connection to the mass. And that's the basic principle. And for that, you need diodes, or otherwise there are several that are burning and are lit up, and that's the problem with that. And
also,
when finding errors, this is a slide I made. This, it's about the so-called Wolf-Fens algorithm. It's from 1987 already. The mathematicians from you probably know this from as an example to prove some math problem. You can see it's like finding a wolf in Alaska. You build a fence, and then you see, okay, where can I hear the wolf howling? And we assume it's on the right, on the left side. Then we can exclude the right side, and then we always take one area into half. And when finding an error, we do it exactly like that. And in the end, the wolf will be fenced. And I tend to be too fast when finding errors, and then later on I have to pay this with a higher effort to find the error. So this is the same how you when you start to fence the problem in, then it's usually easier. Well, when we head to the next generation, Pinball 2000, well, 25 years ago, this back in the day, modern PCs, nowadays it's 25-year-old PC technology. It's not very fun to think about this. CRT monitors. The interface is relatively obsolete by now, and they're very easy to maintain. And luckily, nowadays, there are also Linux systems that help you with that, and you need to build that into your PC, and you can get this running. So you're on PC technology, and the latest generation, the modern generation, current generation, you can see, like in this black box, very it's very highly integrated, very connected. You can connect to servers, save your scores. Relatively new, not so many experience with bugs, but you can easily get software updates. Getting spare parts is still easy. There's some stores where you can get parts for older machines, especially some EEPROMs that are not readable and specialized in programming. Then you need there's some skill deficit in this part. Luckily, we have a market for spare platines, and for this generation, you can get some of these. All of this in inches, imperial measurements, and you can. What's helping in getting parts is 3D printing. You can see over there in this plastic part that came out of the playfield, and we can reprint this with a 3D printer. Yeah, when you hit them with a ball, they look at you quite weird on the playfield, and the 3D printers help you with these. What's also helpful in the end, luckily we have a huge and very helpful community. There's some forums on the internet where I really want to say thank you to, especially like Flippermarkt. I'm getting around there a lot. Pinballs.net, Pinsight. On YouTube, there are a lot of videos, help sites, pinball database, IPDB.org. You get a lot of help there. And thanks to this giant and helpful community, almost everything is fixable, and it's most of the time only a question of effort. Like paying would usually not be doable. But okay. Thank you for listening, and I'm on point with the time. Thanks.
Dann auch vielen Dank für den
Vortrag. Great, and thank you very much for the presentation. And now you can all ask questions. We have a lot of time. Also on the internet, either on Matrix Hall Zero or at backend.org hashtag 39C3 Hall Zero.
Gibt's eine Frage aus dem Internet?
A question from the internet. You just mentioned the financing of these things, and the internet wants to know how you actually manage to finance this effort. Well, there's a lot of private money that goes into this. We have four friends, and each of us owns some of the machines that are standing there. And if someone's coming and a place, we ask for a little bit of contribution to at least cover the electricity costs. But the pinball machines are really privately financed, including the spare parts, rent and stuff. Well, it's a hobby.
Then gerne Mikrofon 3.
Then microphone number 3.
Vielen Dank für den Talk.
Thank you very much for your talk. Very interesting. I also have one standing at home and wanted to ask a question of faith. Do you use rubber or silicon for your parts? Well, we mostly have silicon. But the flippers, it depends on the faith. I usually prefer rubber. With flipper rubber. What we also have is an old condom machine, and out of this you can withdraw some flipper rubber if you want to.
Dann gerne Mikro 1.
Then microphone 1, please. You just mentioned that with newer generations there are sometimes software bugs. You also have some systemic errors in the older machines that you found. We didn't find some, but there are some. And people do reverse engineering of the entire systems and provide fixes. There are systemic errors or faults that the producers don't fix them anymore after 20 years later, and now somebody fixes them. So there are some of those available.
Hi, danke für den spannenden Vortrag.
Thank you for exciting talk. Are there Germany-wide any maps of where working pinball machines are still available in bars or other locations that you might visit? Yes, there seems to be one. Answer from the audience. Comment, rather. Okay, where is it? I can't remember the URL at the moment, but if you want to have a look at this, you can look at the Pinball Machine Forum, the Flipper Markt, and in there you probably have to register, but you can ask the question, and I'm not sure how up to date that is. Pinballmap.com apparently is the URL for that. What do you do with pinball machines that don't really work anymore? I have one of these old electromechanical ones. The score wheel is broken, the half of the relays are stuck. Well, that's a winter project. Well, it might be more of a 10-year project. Well, depends on how much time you have to invest into that. But one of those machines, I invested some weekends into last winter and disassembled the relays. And over the community, you sometimes get score wheels, module cartridges. Sometimes people say, I still have one of those backbox standing in the basement, and you can have it.
You have to have a lot of patience and a bit of expertise and resiliency.
Dann noch einmal Mikrofon 1.
One. Hello. So, yellowed out cabinet or new decade? Another question of faith or belief?
Also meine persönliche Meinung,
well, my personal opinion is I don't really care about the cabinet. But amongst the four of us, we have different opinions. Amongst the four of us, after these pinball machines belong to us individually, each of us decides what to use for those. So only for mine, I only exchange the color when there's water damage or something like that. But yellowing out is not a problem.
Einfache kurze Frage, welche Flipper Generation?
Quick question, which Flipper Pinball Generation is your preferred generation? I can't answer that easily. I play them for all generations. I really like all generations, and after the last winter project, I also discovered my passion for the electromechanical editions, which can also have a lot of give you joy playing that, and maybe sometimes it is diversity and having a change from one to others, and sometimes the people who say like pinball machines are herd animals, so you don't have just one, you have several. It also depends on your partner, how much space you have available and how many machines and thereby space you have available. And you have to occasionally switch to keep it interesting. Mic 2. Digital technology, you mentioned EEPROMs earlier. But so what processors are in those? 68, 86XX, 08, 09, 02, around those, and Synetics. I don't exactly remember the number. 8. Processors.
These 8 processors are inside, I think it's they have been about 86,000, like a giant bug with the many legs, something like that.
Gibt es zum Abschluss noch eine Frage aus dem Internet?
At the end, there is a question from the Internet. Yes, there is. There has been the question for pinball machine generations. And there has been a question if there are also models that you really hate, all of you, because either they are very hard to play or very hard to get. Well, no, very hard question. No, very hard ones. No, this is more of a challenge. They are rather the ones that are not so in demand because the rules are rather boring and not so interesting. Yeah, boring is rather the problem.
Dann vielen lieben Dank für den Talk.
Well then, thanks a lot for the talk. I ask for a huge applause for Axel.